Welcome to the Irish Photography Podcast. Take control of your camera and develop the skills necessary to improve and master your photography. Join me, Dermot O'Donovan, John Myler, and Darren J. Spoonley as they cut through the sometimes confusing jargon of photography to help you find your own style and decide what's best for you. A mix of educational, inspirational, honest, and sometimes controversial content delivered in a unique, fun way from three of Ireland's talented photographers. Let's go.
Hello and welcome to another episode in the Irish Photography Podcast, and I'm your host this week, Darren J. Spoonley, and I'm joined, unfortunately, by my two other co-hosts. One is from Dublin, who resides in Clare, and the other is from Limerick, who resides in Limerick, I think, yeah? Are you in Limerick or County Limerick? Are you in Tipperary?
I'm actually in County Limerick, but it actually sits on the Tipperary border, so I'm still a Limerick man through and through.
How are you getting on?
Good, good. My New Year's resolution is going to plan as I promised from last week, and it's going really, really well. So I feel feeling very good about photography and my headspace in photography. So, yeah, it's a good week, Darren. Thanks for asking.
Good stuff. Top job. How about you, John?
I'm all good, Darren. Thanks very much.
Happy. Are you all set for a good episode this evening?
Hope so. You're hosting, so it remains to be seen. You said you were sorry you're with us, like, so you want to cheer us up a bit, by?
Have a good track record, you know. Yeah, look, I've got a couple of things I want to discuss this evening. So I'm going to have two topics. First topic is something I think, you know, which I think will be a very interesting one, which is, should all photographers shoot film at one stage? So maybe they're starting off at film, or if they start on digital, should they move over to film? So I want to go into that, into the I suppose, the reasons behind that. Second is then, is something that I've really been struggling with, and I think a lot of our listeners might be as well, is understanding storage and having the best possible storage. And I want to go into a bit more detail in regards to that. And this week, our VSP is back, and we'll discuss what that product will be when we get to that stage of it. So rather than, you know, talk any more about what we're going to do, we might as well just dive right into it now. And I'm going to go, really, I suppose, in a different sequence this week. So I'm going to start with Dermot on the first question, and I'm going to give you the first answer on the second question, John, okay? So, on the first part this evening is, should all photographers shoot on film? What's your thought on that, Dermot? Now, the reason I went to you first, incidentally, is you've gone to college and you've learned every aspect of photography, and I know film would have been a big part of it for you. So, what's your thought on that statement?
Okay, first of all, I'm saying my disclaimer now. I bleeping hate film photography. I absolutely despise it in every shape and form. But my answer is yes, every photographer should shoot film. I know it doesn't make much sense, but it's true. It's it makes you think about every shot that you take. If you pay more attention to your detail, your subject matter, pay more attention about the shot before you even take it, because, all right, look, we live in a digital age. You have these cameras, you take a picture, you delete if you don't like it. It doesn't cost you anything except for the cost of the camera and the lens originally, okay? But once you have a film camera in your hands and you take a picture, it's costing you money every time you take a picture. Because one, you have to buy the roll of film. You take your 36 exposures, then you have to go to town to get it developed, or else if you have a lab at home yourself, you can do it also, which I have done, which I absolutely hate. And it's long, it's tedious, and it's nowhere near as good as digital. But for your kind of answer, Darren, yes, I think it teaches you a lot. It'll teach some very, very valuable lessons. And like I said, you think more about the pre-production rather than the after result, if that makes sense.
It does, absolutely, yeah. And I think it's a very good intro as well into it, because you're right, you're hitting the nail on the head on a number of those points. I'd actually argue with one of the points, though, is you say it's cheaper for a digital point of view because it doesn't cost you every time you take a photo. But it's actually more expensive to get a digital camera than get an old film camera and learn the basics. So it can be a very good and cost-effective way to get into photography, learn the basics, really slow yourself down, as you said, you know, and really think about every shot that you want to take. And it's not going to be overly expensive. I mean, look, in reality, you can go off and buy a film camera from one of these kiosks, which will cost you $4.99. You don't have to have anything extra in regards to it.
Yeah, I suppose.
You take your picture, you drop it off, and you can figure out if you've got an interest in it. Whereas some people out there go and go, I want to get into digital photography, okay, and I'm not going to go back over the old 2018 slogan from Dodge, you know, it's shiny, I must have it, but they go, I got to have the best gear, and we've already discussed it on a number of other episodes. Having the best gear does not mean that you're going to be able to take the best photo. You have to learn the basics. So if you want to learn the basics and learn them the hard way, you know, we've spoken before about the exposure triangle and stuff like that and getting out of auto, go get a film camera.
Oh.
And that's where I think it'd be, you know, it's much, much cheaper, like I say, to get an entry into it. Would you disagree with that?
No, I wouldn't disagree, but it's you're right. It doesn't cost you, like, it is more cost effective. But what I meant by that is once you initially buy the camera and you have it, it's an ongoing cost as a film camera enthusiast, whereas a digital, there's no ongoing cost. That's what I meant. I probably didn't explain myself properly. But you, going back to what you just said there, you know, the exposure triangle, when you buy a film, you have to pick your exposure when you buy your film also. So you can buy ISO 400 and you're stuck at that film, you know. So, and then, right, you can do a thing. What's it called again? Is it exposure pulling? You can pull, slide. Ah, my God, my lecturer is going to kill me because I'm after forgetting all of it. Basically, you can kind of manipulate the ISO a bit somehow in some way. I can't remember exactly. I've been out of college a while now. But then, right, and one of your points there was handed off the photo kiosk and whatever. But if you do it yourself, Darren, right, it's a long process, you know, and that's that was my experience of doing it. So in college, we were sent off, go take your 36 exposures, come back. So we were basically sent into a dark room. I mean, dark. There was 0% light. Your eyes would take 40 minutes to adjust to some bit of darkness. It kind of helped you see some bit, but you still wouldn't. And you have to... do you ever see these films where the blindfold, the guys in the army have to take a gun apart and put it back together again? That's exactly what it is with your roll of film. You have to take it out in darkness. You have to wash it in this special detergent, this liquid. And then you have to dry it and everything. And then you have to make your contact sheet in the dark room. And then you can select your pictures that you want. So it's an awful process. It's awful. It's the worst thing I've ever done in my life, but the best thing at the same time.
Yeah, and you see, like I grew up, like my brother, I remember from very, very young age, my brother was always into photography. And I shared a bedroom with him at the time when I was growing up. And one corner of the bedroom, we had these three trays, these three big tubs of this liquid. I had no idea what it was, and all I know is that it was a red light that he'd use for the dark room so he could go processing and developing his own images. But I learned to my dismay how these chemicals, oh my God, I mean, I remember one time he did something and he must have put it down on my bed, and it came back and it more or less burnt a hole in the sheet on the bed because it was so strong, you know. So like, doing it at home can have its own benefits, but you know what you're doing because you've got these dangerous chemicals around the place.
Destroyed my clothes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like bleach, like, you know. John, how about you? I suppose, number one, have you shot film? And number two, do you think that every photographer should shoot film?
I suppose the answer to the first part of the question is no, I've never shot film. But I've spoken to and I speak to many guys who have shot film and now shoot digital. And every single one of the guys that I would have spoken to had said the best way to start was on film for them. Mm. But having said that, they're so happy they're on digital now, if that makes sense. I suppose, Dodd, you may remember there before Christmas, I was talking to you. My son is getting into photography at the moment, and he wanted to get a film camera for Christmas. Dodd, you told me to stay away from them. I didn't know why at the time. He'd done a lot of homework and a lot of research on it, and I was looking at the Minolta X700, which is a fine little film. It's 35mm SLR film camera. And the results that I've seen coming from that were absolutely fantastic. And it actually gave me a little bit of an urge to maybe to give it a go. So doing a little bit more digging, and I spoke to a couple of guys in Prince, in Martin O'Connor being one there is it O'Connor Street?
Yeah.
What street is it on there, Dad?
William Street, Lower William Street.
And Dez in there, Dez shoots film, I stand corrected, but he shoots film, Dez from Limerick Camera Club.
Dez's second name is film.
And you know, they gave me some great advice on it, and they were quite right. Like, you know, the process of shooting a film and developing it, whether it's yourself or getting done in a lab, is quite rewarding.
Yeah.
But it is a long process to be done. If I was going to do it, I would like to take the shot. I'd like to develop myself. I'd like to hang it myself. And I'd feel that the photo, any photograph, even my own digital photographs, I don't consider it a photograph until I have it printed.
Hmm.
That's just my own opinion.
That, That's a very good point, John, because it was something I wanted to bring up there was, you know, if you go back to the first ever digital photo that you took, where is it?
Oh, it's probably going to come up in the conversation of your next topic somewhere.
Exactly. So it's hidden somewhere, buried somewhere in a multitude and a, I suppose, a lost world of ones and zeros on your computer. Whereas I know I've got pictures when I was shooting film that they're upstairs, they're in my memories box, let's just say, and I've gotten them, may not have been very, very good, but at any one point I can take out a physical photo. And that's a big thing. And you said that your photo doesn't become a photo until it becomes a physical photo. But from a film point of view, every photo is a photo because it's not a photo until it's developed onto paper. So from your point, I think you should shoot film. Because if you're saying that a picture isn't a picture until it's a physical form, when every photo you're going to take is going to be a physical form.
Well, can I jump in there for 2 seconds? I have to argue your point there, Darren. Every picture isn't a picture from a digital camera because it's still only a negative. So it's the same as our digital cameras to take a picture. That's still a DNG file, so it's a digital negative. And it's the same with film.
Yes.
So when you take your exposure, your picture, it's still only negative. So it's still not a photograph in a roundabout way.
You're right. You're absolutely right. But I mean, as John would said, it's not a photograph until he's printed
it.
So, you know, until you have it in your hand. I mean, we've all printed our images. We talked about it there last week when we were doing the LIPF, you know, and you physically have your photos in your hand. That's when they come to life in reality, as opposed to looking them on a screen and stuff like that. And I also do think, you know, I messed up hugely.
No way.
When I was learning on film.
No way.
Huge. Huge.
I don't believe
newsflash,
it.
Newsflash, yeah?
But I don't believe it. This is groundbreaking news. I'll put this in my news section later. Darren messed up.
But the part that actually got to me, the part that got to me was, I don't even know if it still exists or not, but it was huge, was the 1 hour photo. So you'd go in with your film and it's ready in an hour. How can they do it this quick? It used to be 2 days, it used to be a day, it used to be 8 hours, it used to be half a day. Bang, 1 hour photo, right? They're gone now. Why? Because people aren't doing it in regards to that. Then you've got dedicated film labs that are doing that developing for you, whereas most people are utilising on digital. But the point I wanted to make there was, I remember I had a 24 exposure film. And I went off and I thought I was brilliant. I was taking all these pictures and everything else and I brought them in to be developed. And when I got them back, every single photo bar one was a pure white piece of paper. And I remember going back into your man and going, there's a problem here. He said, no, the problem, he says, is you. And I said, excuse me. And he takes out the negative and he showed me the negative and every single negative was completely wrong. I'd done every single thing wrong, bar one.
Your ISO was through the roof.
ISO was set from the start, so it couldn't be your ISO. The shutter speed was too low, too slow.
It was a shutter speed.
Is it?
Yeah, too slow. So it was too much light hitting the sensor, you know. And that's then when I kind of was thinking, now, we've mentioned it a couple of times before, how good we have it now with cameras. You can take a picture, you can review the picture, like you said at the beginning, Dermot, and if I don't like it, I can delete it. It's gone. Yeah. It's there. I can see a visual representation, albeit a DNG, which is a process JPEG that we're going to look at, but we can see what the image is like. And you go, I want to adjust that. I want to adjust that. Think back if you look, you know, from the film greats, likes of Ansel Adams and such like that. Like, he's going out to take a photo. Okay, he knows what he's doing, but we mentioned it in about 4 or 5 episodes ago about light metering. There was nothing like that built into the cameras like there are now. So you had to measure the light to get the exposure right to know that this is what I'm going to take and I know I'm going to expose it. But you didn't know if you're going to expose it or not. And if you're a pro like you are, Dad, and you're going out to do a wedding, could you do a wedding on film right now?
Right now, yeah. Yeah.
You could?
That puts you in your box there, Darren.
But it could not, because I could see his face there. I could, our audience won't, no. So yeah. But you know,
I actually did a wedding in film when I was in college, and I was still working as a wedding photographer. And because it was part of my project, I shot some of the wedding in film. No problem.
Some.
Yes, some.
You also had a digital.
Correct.
That's my point. Could you go out there tomorrow with a film camera and only do a wedding with a film camera?
I'd be confident enough to do it, yeah, I could.
You would, yeah, but you'd be bricking it more than you were bricking it sitting down to get your LAPF.
Yeah. I would be bricking it, but
you know what I mean?
I'm confident enough myself to do it, you know.
Well, you're confident in yourself anyway, regardless of having the camera or not. That just puts another bit of thing on top of that, you know.
I think Dodd could photograph a wedding without a camera.
I think he could too, yeah.
So could Chuck Norris.
The other one, oh, here we go. We'll get a picture there of Chuck Norris holding the camera and the film camera. But one thing I'll throw to you here, right? And we've been talking about it recently, about the advances in the digital cameras and all the new things that are coming out and everything else as well. And we spoke about dynamic range. So, you know, the human eye can see up to around 20 stops of light. Am I right on that?
I've no idea about that now. I'll take your word for it.
Okay. It's around 20 from the brightest to the darkest part. Most cameras can be 11 to 12 or some can be 14 to 15 and stuff like that. But a film camera has a higher dynamic range than the digital cameras that we have right now. So if you think about what we're all talking about. Yeah. So if you think about what we're all talking about right now. And everybody's going and we want to go to Sony because it's the highest dynamic range and everything. It's there 20, 30 years ago. Mm.
Just in film form.
Because in film form. And because the different types of films as well that you have to choose. You know, there's a landscape photographer. His name is Ben Horn. He's from the US and every year he goes to Zion. Mm-hmm. And he does his whole trip away to Zion. And he uses, do you know the old style large format?
Yeah, yeah.
Where you put your head under the cloth and everything else. He does that out in the landscape.
That's probably medium format now. I don't think it'd be large format.
I don't know. I think it's medium format. I'm not quite sure. But, you know, I often hear him talking. He's going out for a 6 mile walk and he's got 3 sheets of film with him. So he can take 3 exposures, 3 shots. So we'd go out and you'd have 3 shots before you'd even leave the car. Dodd would have 25 shots of him putting on his shoes. So, I mean, from that point of view, you know, you have to be really slowing down. You have to be really conscious of what you're doing. And you want to take your photos and go, I want to nail this. Like, I think it's something that, you know, we should all turn around and say, you know what, Dodd, you'd be perfect for this because you live on adverts. Go on to adverts, find 3 old film cameras. We'll all get 3 films each and we'll go off and we can take photos with it. And let's see how we get on in relation to it.
There's our Top Gear challenge thing there. So
there you go. Yeah, that could be a good one. And I think that could be something that, you know, would challenge all of us. Definitely challenge John because he would never clue that, you know, I don't know. You've never shot film. This would be, what? I'll eat my words now. He'll come back and he'll have the best images out of all of us.
Well, I was trying to actually give you a wave there to come in because I actually stand corrected. I did shoot film. Back when I'm 42 now, when I was 18, I'm not going to go into it now, but I actually shot it in Romania when I went over to work in an orphanage up in Siret.
You told me this, yeah. Let's see how we get on in regards to that Top Gear challenge, right? I think one final thing, I suppose, really, in regards to it is, I was only talking recently at home here, that the kids now, right, so one is 4, one is 2, and I would love to be able to have a book of their pictures. And taking the sequence of them growing up. So when my eldest, when he was 1, all pictures that we took when he was 1 in a book. I'm going to do it, but I have to go and do it. Whereas go back to our parents' time, we had photo albums. You had a photo album if you went down to Yall. You had a photo album if you went up to Salt Hill. Everybody would have a photo album because you get your pictures printed and you put them into that peel back sticky plastic, whatever the thing was, and there was your photo album in relation to
it. Loads of
them. And I think having having the physical form of the image that film will bring, that I think is actually very, very good. But where I get confused then is, like this guy Ben, when he does his printing, he gets them developed, but then he has to get them drum scanned so that he has a digital version as well then that he can share. But you see the quality on these images, man. Yeah. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Medium format is just it's tenfold still to this day on any 35mm film or full frame camera is, like, you know, it's just an amazing piece of kit. Like, even like you look at the Phase One and Bronicas and all these type of medium format cameras, they're top notch. Like, you know, the detail, the quality of them, from the foreground to the background, is just it's immense. Like, there's no competition for
it. And I think, you know, that's something that a lot of people probably wouldn't realise because they might have gone straight into the digital world. So maybe it shouldn't be just a Top Gear challenge for us. Mm. Maybe it should be a Top Gear challenge for our listeners and our audience as well. Well, you know, I suppose, you know, let's ask a question out there. You know, if you've shot film and, you know, leave us a comment on the Facebook group as to, you know, why you shot film, or do you still shoot film? Or is it something that you might actually try and do now you know, since we brought up the subject in relation to it. But, you know, I do think personally that everybody should shoot film at some point. If you want to get into photography, or if you're already into photography, challenge yourself, you know. Go out, nail the shot that you have to nail. But bigger part is slow down. And it really forces you to slow down, you know. So I think it has a lot of benefits. And even, John, on your point, from the mindfulness point of view, you know, you'll have to slow down. You'll have to start thinking in regards to, do I understand the buttons on the camera? Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Darren, can I ask you, you seem to do a little bit of research there on the film cameras. Have you looked into seeing how many places will actually develop film now?
No, I haven't actually. No, that's a very good point.
Okay, the reason I was asking that was, again, when I was doing my research before Christmas, the amount of places that develop film are rare. You can't get it done in Limerick, as far as I'm aware. I think there's one place in Kerry and one place in Meath. Now, do stand corrected, so if our listeners may be able to let us know in our Facebook page, but I was only able to get two or three places, and none of them are local, which is another reason why we didn't end up getting the film camera, because, you know, it's just too teasing for somebody who's trying to learn the basics of photography, go off and learn their settings, take the photograph, and then have them send it off and wait for it to come back if they weren't developing it at home, which wasn't ideal for my son at the time, because he just got too itchy, took the digital camera in his hand, and once he started using digital, and I threw the exposure triangle on a sheet of paper at him, he was flying it.
I think, now that I'm thinking of it there, John, most chemists will do it.
Not around here.
In Limerick, you can get... Really? Newsom's will do develop C41 camera, or C41 film camera, and Sol O'Connor's.
Okay. Mm. Yeah, so again, let's throw the question out there. Anybody know where you can get film developed? I think that could be an interesting topic for us to discuss with the listeners on the Facebook group. But yeah, a good topic, I think, to start us off, guys. What do you think?
Yeah, spot on. Nice topic to talk
interesting,
about.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and I look forward now to the Top Gear Challenge. I'm just not going to be Jeremy Clarkson.
I'll be Hammond.
No, Dad, I would have said you would have been the Stig.
The Stig.
John, the Stig wasn't the presenter. He doesn't open his mouth. How could we ever get on with Dermot on opening his mouth? That challenge. Would be brilliant. Actually, be Dad, you should be the Stig. You don't have to talk anymore. It'd be amazing.
Be a challenge in itself for Dad.
All right, guys, listen, look, thanks very much for the first part of today's podcast. We're going to take a quick break from a word from our sponsor. Today's episode is brought to you by Hainel Industries. Hainel Industries is one of the leading manufacturers of power products for camcorders and digital cameras. Having celebrated over 50 years in business, Hainel have an excellent reputation in research and development and a well-known history of quality products and excellent design. And welcome back to the Irish Photography Podcast. And we're moving on to our second topic here today now, which is something I think that every person who shoots photos should be aware of. And maybe some people are better at than others. And it's something I really want to go into a bit of detail on, which is image storage and what to look out for. And when we think about it, you know, go back to what we said a moment ago about being on film. The only image storage that we had was in these folders that are up on the shelf in our mother's house or whatever it may have been, or inside in a cupboard and they're sitting there and such like that. But from the digital era, things have really started to progress very, very, very fast. And you think in regards to image sizes are getting more and more and more and more, bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So what we're going to have to try and do here is to understand, where do I need the space to be able to store my files? So if I think back to the first digital camera that I had, I think it was shooting 2 megabyte images, which at the time was brilliant. It was huge, you know. And then I remember there was one, it was 8 megabytes, and I was like, oh yeah, okay, this is the bee's knees, this is the top end. But that was the size of the file and that was the size of the image, whereas we're going right now to... What does your Sony A7R shoot files? What file size is yours?
An uncompressed file, you could get anything between 70 to 100 megabyte file.
Wow. That's unreal. So if we think about, there's the file size. Go back now to the days when computers would have first started up and stuff like that, you know, and you had 256 megabit or hard drives. That was your whole entire hard drive. So now you want to go off and take a picture, you've got a hard drive filled in two pictures. And I remember, you know, in a past life, I would have brought in one of the first USB keys and I was selling them here, right? And they were 8 megabyte cards. That was the size of the card.
Wow.
Whereas, like, and I remember at the time, they were being sold for £99. And that was huge. And that was like, wow, and I can take this hard drive with me. Bear in mind, what we had before then was a floppy disk, which is a 3.5 millimeter, I think, or in 3.5 inch size in regards to a floppy disk. And it was minuscule in what it could actually save on. So that's the first step, I suppose, in regards to how big the files have gotten since we now moved on to the cameras and stuff like that. But now add video to that. Now, you started that video, Dermot, and you actually sent me a message yesterday. Was it yesterday you went out? What size files did you record on a one day?
I came home at 42 gigs of data for one vlog.
Jesus. 42 gigs of data. Yeah, okay. Jesus. So, just so, I suppose, most people, I suppose, would understand it in regards to it, okay? But, you know, you've got 1,000 megabytes in a gigabyte. So you had 40,000 megabytes.
Yeah.
Of footage just from one day, let's just say. And like, when you think about that, where are you going to store that? You're going to store that on an external hard drive. If you're going to have to store it on an external hard drive, because if you go and store it on your hard drive in your computer, that's going to fill up very, very fast. And like, I remember when I was getting my Mac, and I got it in 2015, I think it was, it was a 3 terabyte hard drive. So again, you know, 1,000 megabytes is a gigabyte, 1,000 gigabytes is a terabyte. So I had 3 of those, so 3,000 in total. And I remember looking at the time going, oh, this is going to be great, I'm going to have a huge amount of space. I had very little space. And when you think about it, how long is it going to take you to fill up that space? The first Mac that I had was a MacBook Air, and it had 110 gig hard drive. That was it.
110 gig. Now, wow, that's tiny. That's nothing.
Hard. It's nothing, but it was huge at the time. But like, if I was to go off out and take my photos and stuff like that, you know, if I'm looking at a 10 megabit bit file or a 12 megabit file, it's not. I'm going to get a lot of images before I'm ever going to come near filling that up. But because now people are talking about getting all these newer cameras, don't forget, if you're getting a newer camera and you're getting bigger file sizes, you also need to upgrade your storage. Do you know what I mean? Like, John, you've discussed with me before in regards to, you know, storage and what hard drives and stuff you would have. And I remember looking one day when we were doing a screen share here on your computer, and I was like, okay, how come he's got so much space in his computer? Because you don't save anything really on your computer as such. It's all saved on an external hard drive, yeah?
Yeah, I save absolutely nothing on my computer, and that's because I learned the hard way a few years ago when I did save stuff on the computer, and the computer went belly up on me. Now, I was able to salvage the files through one of the stores in Limerick, but oh, it was a disaster, because I think I had a year's photographs on them, edits, you name it, were all on it, lost, bang. So since then, and that's going back a good while, I store everything on external hard drives. I have one big hard drive that I send probably yearly my other hard drives into as a double backup, but I don't back up as good as I know other people do back up. I can't think of it. What's the one that's built into the iMac or the cloud or something, Darren? I can't remember the name of it at all. There's something that you use through the Mac.
Time machine.
Like, you might explain that, because I don't understand the time machine, and is it worth me setting up? But to answer your question, I do save everything to external hard drives. On front of me here now, I have 3 of them. I have one there for the last year, which is coming. It's a Lacy. It's coming to an end. And I will have to back that up onto something else just so I have a double backup of it, because it'd be a disaster if I lost all those things.
How about you, Dermot?
Yeah, I have a very kind of strict regime here. I photograph professionally, so I do a lot of weddings. So I have to be very careful about what I shoot and how I back it up, you know. So, like, I wouldn't be like you. I wouldn't have a 3 terabyte Mac. I've only got 1 terabyte. But whenever something goes onto my, like the vlogs, they all went onto my computer first until I'm finished, and then they get off the computer to get me onto an external hard drive. But not only that, once they go onto the computer, they're backed up onto an external as well at the same time. I always need a backup. There's a 4 terabyte external hard drive there. Not only that, there's a 3rd backup then on the network drive, which I have hidden in my house. Just in case someone comes in and steals my computer and my hard drives and everything, at least then it's called a triple backup thing. So then at least wedding clients, they still have their images on that hard drive. So if all comes to all, I have to do is go and get a new computer And then I just hook that up and I can download. It's just the important images now going to the third backup. Now, not, you know, if I go to the Cliffs of Moher tomorrow, take a picture, that's not going to be triple backed up, like, you know. So, but just say for arguments, the vlog. So I went out, shot that 42 gigs of data, did that vlog the same day. So I just didn't want it on my computer. And then once it's edited out the door, then all the raw footage then goes onto an external SSD, which I just bought the other day. So I have another SSD there, but I'm keeping that just for vlogs. So it's not taking up space on the 4 terabyte hard drive either. So I just have my own little system. And then also I have another SSD, an external one, but it's only 120 gig one. So I use that for if I'm going from a job to another job. So I create a catalog for Lightroom and I can use it on my desktop. And then if I'm going to a job somewhere, I can bring my MacBook Pro with me, plug it in and still use that same catalog and have all the settings, raw files, everything with me. And it's a nice petite, small little one, you know.
And that's a very good point as well, because, you know, we talk of in regards to storage and from a home point of view, but from a professional point of view, you have to have that redundancy. But also then as well, you know, if you're a graphic designer, for argument's sake, and you want to go out and you want to do a presentation to some client or some potential customer, you can have it on your hard drive, fine, but there's only so much that you can have on your hard drive because that's your working space, whereas you got that external USB key you can bring with you. And I've seen people come to us, and they won't have a laptop or anything like that, they just have a USB key. And everything is on the USB key because it's already a PowerPoint presentation and it's just a matter of plugging it in. So there's another aspect as well that you don't necessarily have to bring everything with, that it can actually just from the portable storage point of view. And then something that really came to mind to me, the SanDisk one I think are quite good as well. Is that what you have to...
Yeah, it's not a, USB key, it's a triangular kind of thing. And it's a proper SSD, like, and you can get them in 480 gig as well, but I just picked this handy up in adverts, you know. Shocker, I bought something in adverts.
I know. Well, look, I tell you a couple of interesting things for me, right? And I'll go into a bit technical details in a moment, because I did a bit more research in regards to this, to the different types. But remember I said a moment ago about my MacBook Air, so it's just over 100 gigabyte hard drive. And I'd fill that straight away. My computer would be full. Immediately. I remember when I first started off from photography, I went, I'll get a nice big hard drive here. Actually, you know what? I got to get a second big hard drive because I want to do a double backup. So I got 2 4-terabyte hard drives.
Are they expensive, Darren?
Well, they've come down in price now. But like, I'll tell you what I got, right? So I got the standard hard drive, which is like a hard drive is effectively a disc, like a record player. It has an arm that's on it and it reads off the disc and it rotates at 7,200.
Revolutions per minute, RPM.
Yeah, revolutions per RPM. Yeah, exactly. So it has to read that disk. So you know, you've ever noticed if you're turning on your computer, you got to wait for the disk, external disk, to spin up if you're reading any data from it. So they got to get up to speed first. Then the arm has to move out to the position that it is. Then it has to read that. And depending then how it's connecting is going to be a big factor as well, because if you've got one that's connecting by USB and it's your standard original USB, it's going to be dog slow. If you go to USB 2, it will get the information coming through faster. And I'll touch on those speeds as well in a moment, right? But I'd put everything onto that drive, and then I'd have a backup drive as well. So effectively, I had a ghost image in regards to it. But what happened when my 4 gig hard drive was full? My backup was also full.
Yeah.
So now I said, okay, I need to get another one now, because I've got 2 drives full. So then I went off and I said, okay, I got to get another. And I got another... I think it was a 6 terabyte. So it was 2. It was a 4 terabyte and a 2 terabyte inside in the one box, let's just say. It was 6 terabytes. Ah, that's just going to do me forever. No, it hasn't. So now I've had to get an 8 terabyte hard drive. And the reason why, and using an 8 terabyte hard drive is because I have 100 videos up on YouTube. So it's been all video. My file sizes are tiny in comparison, shooting 4K on the drone, shooting 4K with the Hero 7, shooting 1080p on the G7X, and then everything else then it comes in associated with that, with different GoPros and stuff. It's not long adding up. Like, you've got 40 gigabytes from one shoot. Yeah, 40 terabytes. That would be like... But hang on.
16K.
Yeah, exactly. You could be, you know, if you go to the Canon Reds, the 8K videos, like, you'd rack up so much space there. It's incredible, you know. But then I started to get really confused, right? Because I would normally say, like, John, there's my hard drive, that's going to last me for the year. At the end of the year, I plug it out, okay? I put it away safe.
Back it up to something else, though.
That's because I did. I was backing up to the second one, so I'd take the both of those out, so I had to replace them. But then I was thinking, okay, you know, but what should I get now? I should get one that's going to be faster. So I started looking at all this connections and stuff like that, right? And I'll give you a couple of interesting statistics, right? So USB, like I say, is going to be very, very slow. USB 2 is going to be at 480 megabits per second. That's how fast it's going to transfer that. Yeah?
At USB 2.0.
Yes.
Okay.
USB 3 is 5 gig.
A second?
Yeah.
Really?
The newer ones, yeah. But...
is there a 3.1?
There's a 3.1 as well, then that goes up even further, but it's only just after coming out of the relationship. Yeah. That can go up as far as 10. So the Apple Thunderbolt... I said I'd go off and get one of those ones, and that can go up as far as 10 gigabits per second, right? But then that gave me another dilemma, because when I filled that and I had the other hard drives that I wanted to say, okay, I want to move them off from, and I got a new hard drive, which was USB 2, okay, at the time. So I was dealing with half the speed of the working versus what I was used to from the Thunderbolt. So then I said, okay, you know what I'm going to do? Actually, you know, I'm going to move everything off the Thunderbolt, back that up to another hard drive. So I have now another hard drive, right? And I'll use the Thunderbolt as my working drive. But then the problem that I encountered, and I asked you, Dermot, how to help me out recently about it, was if I wanted to go back into Final Cut Pro to do a change on a video, it couldn't find the files because it was looking for the files on the Thunderbolt drive. So then I had to go and then relink all the files and everything else as well. It's not that difficult to do, but it's just a pain in the backside when you first see all those red boxes and stuff like that as well.
It's almost like a freak out, like, where's my stuff gone?
Yeah, exactly, you know. So then I started looking, and it's something, the reason I wanted to discuss it here today, because I'm sure there's going to be some data storage experts out there. Besides you, Dermot, I know you're an expert in everything. But you've got a couple of different options. You alluded to one there, which is the SSD drives. I actually got one there just after Christmas. Started New Year, actually, and I just got it, really. It's a 4 terabyte SSD external hard drive.
Ooh, lovely.
And, you know, as much as I try and buy everything I can here in Ireland, my wife was ordering something on Amazon, and she said, do you want me to order anything for you? And I was looking at this, trying to find this equivalent for the same price, and I couldn't get it. 4 terabytes, Dermot, SSD, cost me £132.
That's nothing. That is nothing.
For nothing.
That's unreal.
You know, and that was like using reason number 3 for gas. You know, it was such a good deal, I couldn't turn it down. But in reality, I went, I'm not going to get anything like this again. And I wanted to get it from the speed. And it is wicked fast. So SSD is a solid state drive. It doesn't have that...
Doesn't have a spinning drive.
It doesn't...
It's flash memory.
Yes. It doesn't... Exactly. So it's almost instantaneous. It's like putting a SD card into your camera. From that point of view, it's very, very quick. And it's very reliable as well. But I started looking then... and saying, okay, how long can I continue stacking up hard drives here? You know, I wanted to try and find a way to be able to do it. So, like, there's a couple of different types that you can do. And I give a bit of information, I suppose, in relation to, because I've done the research on it. So you've got a DAS. It's a DAS, D-A-S, which is a direct access storage. So that's something that's connected in via cable directly into your computer. So via USB 2, USB 3, FireWire or Thunderbolt or whatever the connection type that you would have. That's connected directly into your computer. It's advantageous because it's connected straight into your computer, but it's a disadvantage that it's only into your computer, so you can't get anything from a network point of view. If you want to be able to stream with your TV, anything from it, you can't do that either. Whereas another version, which is called a NAS drive, which is a network access storage. So that will allow you to be able to go on your network, and if your TV is on your network, you can see that as a drive, and you can stream everything down to your TV and stuff like that. Whereas you can't do that unless you plug it out of the computer and plug it in via USB into your TV and stuff like that. And there's a third type then as well, which I won't even go into. It's an SAN, which is a storage area network. And that's when you're looking at effectively like a comms room setup. You'll have multiple drives all linked together, all connected up via RAID, all self-mirroring and self-backing up and such like that. And it's effectively a component system. So you can go off tomorrow and buy it's an internal hard drive, the same as what you'd normally have, and it just slots into the top of these. So you can change these out and upgrade these as things would go on. So when you first got one, you might have had a 2 terabyte size maximum of a hard drive. Now you can get them up as far as 12. You could go off tomorrow and say, okay, there's 6 drives in this bank. I'm going to change all those out now because I can get a 12 terabyte hard drive, which effectively gives me all those 6 on one. And now I've got 5 more to replicate it out as well and 5 more backups. Mm. But the options on this thing is huge. But the costs on this as well is even getting even higher. And, you know, when you think about it, you know, is it worth spending the money on that much quality storage? John, you have a Lacy drive there, which are pretty rugged and pretty indestructible. Dodd, you've got the SanDisk one there, which is fully waterproof as well. You can actually get that wet and nothing will damage it.
Yeah.
Because it's nothing, effectively there's nothing moving in there as well. You know, like they say, you know, people's cameras, they get lost at water and they're found. When you take out the SSD card, or the SD card, sorry, you know, they'll still work potentially unless it's corrosion on the contacts, but because there's no moving parts in relation to it, you know. But then the other point then, and the final point I want to go on this was, I was looking then, how am I going to be able to access all of these things? Because on my Mac, I have 4 USBs. I bought an extension arm which gives me 8 more USBs. These USB 3s, they use 2 USB connections. So you plug one of those into your computer, it's going to take up 2 of your USB ports. So I think the NAS drive is probably the way to go, but it's going to be a big investment in relation to it. And I think it's something that, you know, maybe people are more conscious of than me, but when I was starting to research it more, I said, geez, there's a myriad of things here that I need to be conscious of. There's a huge array from different manufacturers. Like, why should I buy Seagate, or why should I buy Western Digital, or why should I buy Lacy? Are they all exactly the same? Why should I buy SanDisk? Like, why are they all different prices? Why are some SSDs, like 4 terabytes, £860?
Yeah.
You know what
Do
I mean?
You know what, Darren? I could be totally wrong. You're paying for the name. They're probably all made in the exact same factory, and when they come out of the factory, they put all their own stamps on them. It was like this, I used to make cars in a past life, so I used to have all these Nissan Skylines, Nissan Silvias, and just all these super turbo cars, right? And there used to be this intercooler that you'd have on the front of your car, and it used to be made by a company called Greddy, or G-Ready, what some people call them. But you could get a knockoff, not a knockoff, a Chinese branded one for a third of the cost. But yes, they're all made in the same factory. And it's proven, in fact, it's proven that they're all made in the same factory. And it's just you put on your own stamp and they're sold at X amount of price. I wonder, are SSDs all made in the same place and saying, here, there you go.
I've heard the same thing about golf clubs. Darren, but you know, one thing listening to you there about talking about the storage, and it is a big cost. And you're talking about your Mac, your everything. Wouldn't it be a lot easier to shoot and film?
True story, John.
There you go.
But the one point I will say to you on this, though, is if you don't back up your images, start now. Because if you lose everything, it's gone. You don't have that paper that you can look back over and pull out from the cupboard in your mother's house, your nan's house, or whatever. It's gone. So it's important, I think, to have a backup. And, you know, don't be underestimating the fact that things can fail. Hard drives can fail, and they can fail very, very easily, as you said, John, with your own computer. But have everything, if you can, on an external. And the reason I'd say it finally, have it on an external, is because the more you fill up your hard drive on your computer, the slower your computer becomes, because there's so much files using the space that you would have, and your RAM and everything else as well, then is going to be really overwhelmed overall. Free up space so that the computer can actually work in a clearer way.
No, you're absolutely right. I'd recommend back up. And when you're finished backing up, back up again. Those photographs that I lost were of my second youngest young lad when he was a baby.
Yeah.
And I have no photographs of him when he's a baby, only other than what the parents might have taken at the time.
Yeah, that's it. And you know, like we talk about extra storage and stuff like that, don't forget about your phones. Most people are taking photos now on their phones. And Apple, in their infinite wisdom, which we all use Apple phones, I imagine a lot of people out there do, Apple, in their infinite wisdom, come out and say, oh, we've come up with the latest phone now. The smallest is going to be 32 gigabyte phone, 64, 128, 256. And we'll give you free storage of 5 gig.
5 gigs is nothing.
Nothing. And, you know, like, you try and back up to that. I mean, I constantly get it on my phone saying, you know, you've reached your iCloud capacity. I'm like, yeah, whatever. I don't use it because I'll plug it into the computer. And again, I'll take the photos off the phone and I'll put them on a separate folder, on a separate drive, so that I have those as well. You know, so I think it's a huge, huge, huge topic. And particularly from a photography point of view, it's a lot to consider, you know. So, yeah, listen, any further points to add to that, guys?
Just, Darren, if there's anybody listening here, and hopefully there are, that, like you said, know a lot can recommend backup systems and so on, different cloud systems, maybe again they'll let us know through the Facebook page. It'd be good to hear.
Yeah. Dermot?
Just one last thing. I wouldn't go through as many hard drives as you, Darren, I mean, even though I shoot quite a lot. The reason is I scour through my photographs maybe once every 2 months, and whatever I know I'm never going to use again, I just delete it and get rid of. And it's the same with the vlog stuff. I'll review all those kind of that bit of footage, and if something I like that I'll keep. If not, I'll just dump it, and that way then I don't have to buy as many hard drives as Darren. So if you're in a bit of housekeeping mood, I really encourage you to do it.
Good stuff, guys, thanks for that. Look, we're going to take one final break there with a word from our sponsor, and we'll come back with today's VSP.
Today's episode is brought to you by Hainel Industries. Hainel Industries is one of the leading manufacturers of power products for camcorders and digital cameras. Having celebrated over 50 years in business, Hainel have an excellent reputation in research and development and a well-known history of quality products and excellent design.
And welcome back to the final part of today's episode. I'm having great fun actually talking to the two guys. And we're moving on now to the product, I suppose, really, which I always have with me. I always swear by it. I find it as something that it has huge benefits from a photography point of view, particularly for me from a landscape point, but I do imagine it's going to have a benefit across the board. It's a filter. It's something we haven't spoken about before, and it's a polarizing filter. Have you a polarizer, Dad?
I have, and it's funny that you say it because I had a bit of a wobbler yesterday with my I don't have a circular polarizer. I have a HD polarizer, and I ended up getting a bit of a crack in it. So I have a hated one, and I wasn't happy because I was told that these things were more or less indestructible when I bought it. And lo and behold, there's a crack in the top of it, you know. But yeah, they are fantastic. But which one do you have, Darren?
I have the Lee landscape version, so it's a thinner piece of glass.
Oh, lovely.
No, they're it's a circular polarizer as well, so you know it's very, very good in that point of view. John, I think you have the same, do you?
I have two. I have the same one as you, and I also have the Nisi one.
Okay.
I changed over to the Nisi system now. I use a bit of both between Lee and Nisi filters for that. The reason I changed over to filter was I was still getting a bit of vignetting even in the Lee landscape one.
Yeah, on the 1635.
Yeah.
Yeah, you will get that. That's the foundation kit, and it brings it out that small little bit extra as well. But I remember you when you first got your polarizer. There's a funny story there, yeah?
Yeah, I suppose.
Sorry.
I have to speak up.
Sorry, I had to run away there. I had to check. It wasn't HED, it was a Nisi HD polarizer I have.
The Nisi one?
Yeah, the Nisi one as well. Sorry. And that cracked.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
No, I've got go on.
Sorry, one second. Dermot.
Yes.
That's the HD version. That's not the Nisi one with the polarizer built into the foundation kit.
No,
it's an external big piece of glass.
It's 150mm by 150mm HD polarizer.
Okay, yeah.
So their whole technology behind it is that you don't have to be 90 degrees to the sun. You can shoot at any position. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Sorry, John. Go on.
I was admiring your polarizer, Darren, for a long time. And as you know, they're quite expensive to leave polarizers. But you also discovered then, when you buy the polarizer, you have to buy the adapter. Is that correct? To go on your foundation kit as well. So added up, they're quite expensive. I can't remember. I think it was 300 and something at the time, 340 maybe at the time to get both. So I got this. I was very excited to get it. We were going up to Hoth, Aaron, right? We were meeting an old friend. And we were up in Hoth. I went up on a Saturday. My filter came in the post on the Friday. I'd never used it. Itching to use it. We went from Hoth, then went to the Wicklow. And just to set the scene, Darren, as you may remember, it was very, very cold. Yeah? There was traces of snow on either side. A bit like the Clare Glens, Dad. The same kind of setup as the Clare Glens. Darren and Kevin went off up into their waders, up shooting away, and I'm sitting on this rock taking a lovely photograph of these little falls, and whatever way I stood up, it's just like it was just bloody slow motion. I just saw filter, holder, everything just popped up into the air, up over my right shoulder, and splash.
How did it go upwards?
Yeah, don't ask me. It was like a spring. It just popped up and over and splash. And I just remember looking down and hitting the water. Went, oh, sweet Jesus Christ. 300 and something quid down the drain. And I only got one click of the camera out of it. Funny enough, the photograph came out very well. I'll actually share it after this podcast goes out. But I wasn't going to leave it there. I went up to the lads. The lads, never going to believe it. What happened? They thought I was taking the mic because earlier on in the day, we also had an accident, Darren, didn't we? Do you think I was going to forget about that?
I certainly haven't forgotten about any of it because I blame the two of you because of it. Yeah, we had an earlier accident in Hoth. My camera decided to go for a 10-point dive and it got 9.9, but it didn't get to 10. Go anyway, back to your story. Yeah,
that was your step up to full frame.
Very sad. Yeah, very sad story. Very sad story. Very sad story.
Yeah,
Caramel's
I think
a
you
bitch.
Dropped it up.
Well, actually, you know what? I was going to get that old. It was a 70D that That's I had. Right, and I was going to, do a very fun video for April Fool's Day, and I found the best way to clean your sensor. And I was going to have the kids wash the camera in a bucket of water. Yeah.
Remember.
But anyway, go on. Sorry.
Well, anyway, to finish off that story, the filter went into the water. It was the dark water that you see in the rivers and the mountains, Baltic cold. So I asked Darren for his waders. Stepped into the waders, but it was too deep, Darren. I wasn't remember that. I mean, we found a big, big stick and we measured the depth of it, and that was just too deep. So I improvised, believe it or not. Now it's all come back to me now that I think about it. And I got my soft grad filter, placed it on top of the water. And I remember saying to you, Darren, if I'm going to see this, the only hope I have is if the little brass piece is sticking up and we shone a torch into the water to see if we get a reflection. And little did we know, looking in through the ND filter, there was this little sparkle of gold, like a little piece of gold sitting down the bottom. And we had one chance, and I just took one deep breath. Up we went, head down under, straight down. There it was. But Darren, the funniest part of that story for me was, I remember coming up and taking a big deep breath because it was absolutely Baltic cold. The water went inside the waders. Your waders were ruined. I handed it to you. I eventually got out. And then you said to me, did you ever think it was going to be cracked? And I just remember looking at your face going, don't. I was nearly going to say the F word. Don't tell me after all that. No, there. And you know what? I still have it today, but I don't use it. I changed to the Nissi system. The reason I changed to the Nissi system, one is because I didn't trust the holder anymore. But two, I do like the Nissi system, the way you can change the rotation of your filter with this little dial at the back of it. It is quite cool, and you can put your ND filters in over it. So if I was to pick, which one do I prefer? At the moment, I prefer the Nissi, to be honest.
Well, I mean, look, I suppose we've all had our experiences there with a polarizer. But again, just from our listeners, and the reason why I picked it as a VSP, it doesn't have to be any particular brand. I'm not talking about a brand here. You know, you can get any type of polarizer that's out there. And, you know, Dermot, you alluded to it a second ago. So a polarizer is supposed to work when the sun is at 90 degrees. So basically, it takes away any glare that you may have from a water point of view. It also enhances the colors as well. And it can also help you as well, you know, if you're shooting and it's overly bright, you can actually get it, depending on the manufacturer, anything from one to two stops of control of the light and such like that as well. But from my point of view, and I actually did an episode about it a year or so ago, actually, I think it was, anytime I go shooting in the woods and there's water there, I will always use my polarizer. Always. Every single time, always. Because I remember growing up seeing guys going fishing on the river, and they're wearing their polarized glasses. And I was like, what are you wearing the polarized glasses for? Oh, sure, we can see into the water and we can see the fish. And I'm like, no, they can't. What are they talking about? You know, they're taking the mickey out of me here. But you can, you know, I mean, you can take away the glare that's on the water. You can see right down into it. And I was out shooting there yesterday with Kieran O'Mahony, and we were down in Waterford, and I was over chatting to him. I'd taken my photos and everything else. I was done from that section. But I was just chatting away to him, and I looked, and there was a rock pool. And in the rock pool, there was this beautiful purples, there was these greens, there was these yellows, there was the limpets, whatever I think they're called, limpets anyway. They're like a shell that sticks onto the rock and stuff like that. And the water was flat calm. And to look at it, you'll see the sunlight reflecting off the top of it. So I says, Kieran, have you a polarizer there? He said, I do. I said, let's throw it on. Throw on the polarizer, and bang, all that sheen is gone. And you're looking down into this other world. And it just changes things dramatically, you know. It's something from a landscape point of view, I swear by. Dad, is there a use for a polarizer in wedding photography?
Nah, not really. Unless someone proves me wrong. I've never used them. Ever. No.
Is there a use for a polarizer in film?
If in film you can change the saturation of the midtones and the greys, yes you can, yeah. Get rid of reflections in the water and metallic objects in film, yeah.
Okay. John?
I have actually used the polarizer a lot in the forests. You know, I like photograph trees. I use it to bring up the greenery in the moss.
Yeah.
And it's particularly when it's foggy, believe it or not. Yeah. It just brings up the whole saturation there as well, a bit like without the same with the film. So yeah, there is uses of it other than just on water.
Okay. Well, I mean, look, you know, that's really why I picked it, because it's so versatile. It's a really good piece of equipment. Yeah, it can be quite expensive. You know, the Lee system, I think, is quite expensive, but it is good. But it's not about the brand in this one. It's just a polarizer. So I'm going to go back to what we started off around 4 or 5 episodes into the podcast. I'm going to give a polarizer an 8.5 out of 10 for my VSP. What about you guys?
I'm going to give my polarizer, my individual, now as much as...
No, not your polarizer. Forget about your brand. Okay. And I know you've a got a polarizer. Dislike in regards to that. A polarizer. No. The benefit of a polarizer. Not your brand, a polarizer. Don't be swayed.
Okay, I was actually going to give it a higher mark, my brand, because I don't need sun at 90 degrees. Because that technology is fantastic. If I don't have to have the sun at 90 degrees over my shoulder. So just for argument's sake, I have this pool of water. Just say Ropin Fanhead Lighthouse. And we know a fellow called Kevin Foley had a lovely reflection in the pool of Fanhead Lighthouse. What if I wanted to get rid of that and the sun was in the wrong position and it wasn't going to work? Whereas my polarizer will work in all situations. No, it doesn't have to be at 90 degrees. So my particular brand, I'd give it a 9 out of 10.
What brand did you say that was again, Dad?
Nisi HD polarizer. It's a 150mm square filter.
John?
I give it 8 out of 10. 2 points down. Nothing to do against the polarizer more, because I probably don't use it as much as I could or I should. But when I did use it, yeah, I like it. 8 out of 10.
Okay, good. All right, so look, again, like everybody else, I suppose, or in the previous topics, you know, if people want to let them know their thoughts on the polarizer, have they got one? Have they found it? Have they thought about getting one? Just feel free to leave a comment on the Facebook group. So yeah, guys, that's it. That's another, 50 minutes, I think, nearly an hour gone already.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed today's one. I think that was some good topics there. I think, you know, it's something that maybe we can trash out further now and have our Top Gear challenge, Dermot.
Yeah, we should get a we should get a challenge out soon enough after people sign it.
Yeah. Yeah. So listen, for me, you know, thanks very much for, it's been my episode. I've been in the hot seat. I'll be out of the hot seat now for next week. It's back to you guys there again. But for me, thanks very much, and Schlangefall. John.
Cheers, Darren. Thank you. I'll talk to you soon.
Hey yo.
If you've enjoyed the Irish Photography Podcast, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. Until next time, guys, keep shooting.